It's Gil Alexander. We're getting a little nerdy, a little granular here today with the betting stuff. Hope everybody enjoys it. For me, this is how the podcast used to be, right? When I wasn't a hamster on a wheel doing shows every single day, I got to like really talk betting and nothing else but betting. But I'm curious about this question. This is a great question from the Auburnist, and Drew Dinsick is kind enough to hang out with us this hour. And I'll actually bring you in for this, Drew. This is from the Auburnist. He says, he's clarifying what he was saying earlier. He says, sorry, I was talking about the books not grading the bet. He was using the word scoring, and it sounded funny. He goes, wouldn't the books want a decision on these? Is it good for them scoring it a push instead of scoring it for whoever is ahead when the withdrawal happens? So this is a great question, and I'll bring you in for this, because what he's asking is, so there's shops that only require one set to be finished, and they pay you out whoever advances. But of the shops, the old school shops that require the entire match to be graded, he's asking, and I guess what he's asking, I'll rephrase it by saying, what's the reasoning for them having that rule and sticking with that rule?
Yeah, this is kind of a new thing that's come about. Back in the day when I started betting tennis, it was almost every book was one set must be finished and then we'll grade the money line. And my guess is that the kind of tendency to move to void everything unless the match is completed is because they had some customer, it's just a kind of a customer experience decision, right? Like to your point, to the point of the question, it's in the advantage of the house to grade any market to get to have an outcome. It's their advantage. They don't want to be voiding bets. That's not good for the house. But the fact that they are voiding those, and my guess is that it's because they are voiding the handicap. They are voiding the set correct scores. They are voiding the totals. And so grading the money, you know, grading the outcome, the money line outcome, and voiding everything else, I think they probably were just kind of making some customers unhappy. And so they elected to just void everything, is my guess.
That's as good of an answer as any, I would think. I think you're probably right. Yeah.
And
I'll give you an example, by the way, for those wondering which are the shops that require full grading. Bookmaker Offshore Stalwart requires full match to be played. Who's the shop here that also MGM is one set, I believe. Caesars is a full grade, if I'm not mistaken. One of those is a full grade. I think it's Caesars that requires the full match. I could be wrong about that. But up until recently, they were that way, as I recall. Yeah. So anyway, there's places that are still full.
My guess is it's a customer service thing. The online help agents got tired of answering angry questions about why did you void my over that was already home, but you graded my money line a loser. Yes, that's kind of that'll I think get that's old. Probably
that'll get old real quick. Do you have any tennis in Cincinnati today for us?
I do. I like Medvedev a lot too. Against Nakashima.
That's a
good matchup for him.
Yeah.
Medvedev, I laid the game and a half. I think he covers the handicap there. I like -136 too. My fair price there is -158. Nothing against Nakashima. He played great in Montreal, but these conditions and the matchup style, in my opinion, solid favorite to Medvedev there.
Mostly
chalk popped on my card today. I have a decent edge on Musetti over Michael Zhang. I think that the best way in, I got in at -179. It's -197 now. I think I would lay the 2.5 games over laying -197. So I would still look for Musetti to come through 2-0 against Michael Zhang. Again, nothing against Zhang, a solid player. I like Tiafo versus Lerner Tien. That is still available at plus money at a couple spots. And then tomorrow, I'm going against my guy, Archer Feist, and I'm going to back a player that I absolutely hate in Alex Demonauer. But Demonauer being +152 right now is kind of crazy. That should be way closer to 50-50. And I think a couple of, tweak a couple of things in your model, I could convince myself Demonauer should be a small favorite there, and he's at +152. So gonna go with Demonauer tomorrow and look for some daylight against Feist.
Glad to hear you're on Medvedev. That is my only my only tennis play in Cincinnati.
Oh, you got a good price.
Is Medvedev. This is overnight for VSiN subscribers. Last night, -128 versus Brandon Nakashima. I saw -133 when I first started the show this morning. But this reminds me of this reminds me of a match a couple days ago when Felix Auger-Aliassime was taking on Stefanos Tsitsipas. Now, this some of that had to do with Felix hadn't played in a long time, hadn't played since Wimbledon, I don't think. But it's sort of like Auger-Aliassime was this very small favorite, just like Medvedev here's against Nakashima. Again, nothing against Nakashima, who just got to his first 1,000 final in Toronto. Nothing against Tsitsipas, who's having a bit of a career resurgence. But it's like, have we gotten to the point where we're so recency biased that we really think Medvedev shouldn't be a bigger favorite against Nakashima today, and Felix shouldn't have been a bigger favorite against Tsitsipas the other day? Yeah. So reminds me
the
of that.
The Felix, yeah, it's a good call. The Felix one was interesting because he skipped Canada. I think people were convinced there was something wrong.
That's right. That's right. His home country.
Because it was a little bit of a, why would you could have won Canada. You would have been the top seed, right? I mean, second seed, I guess, after Zverev, but Zverev clearly wasn't playing for anything there. So he presumably passed up the chance at the Coupe Roger or Rogers Cup. Then we're in Montreal. So it would have been Coupe Roger.
And it was Montreal. He's a Quebec guy, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. He's a French Canadian. Yeah. So him passing up on that, I think people just assumed. But I tell you what, both Felix and Medvedev, I think, are interesting right now. As you look at the board for the US Open broadly, I would really love to see both guys pick up a little bit of steam here. Neither one is especially, kind of ground down by the fatigue of the season to this point. If they can put some form together going into US Open, they'll both be pretty interesting. If they can land in, quarters that are not Sinner quarters. Obviously, we still haven't gotten confirmation that Sinner's going to play the US Open. We haven't gotten confirmation on Alcaraz either. I expect both men will play.
Feels like
it. But yeah, I mean, the guys in like the Zverev, Shelton, Djokovic, Hodar, Fritz tier, I think are all a little short right now in terms of their price. Felix and Medvedev at 35-1 are both players to watch, that in particular Medvedev, like his skill set is, I think, perfectly tuned for a hard court speed like Cincinnati, should also be able to carry that into Flushing Meadows. It's in general, this is his time of the calendar where he tends to pop a little bit because he's not as ground down by the clay and grass because he just doesn't make deep runs in those tournaments. And so, he's getting towards the end of where we're going to consider him a realistic contender at any tournament. But I really hope Medvedev puts a little bit of form together here going into the USO.
Medvedev's one slam title here at the US Open. Yannick Sinner -140, Carlitos +260. You expect one of them to win.
Didn't he win the Australian Open, Gil? I remember him up 2-0, and he was up a break in the third. I'm pretty sure he got that across the finish line, right?
Checking.
Oh,
no.
Didn't he happen. Lost to Nadal.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Sinner's winning this, though, you think? Sinner?
I think so. Yeah. I actually got some close to 50% ish at some of the PMs. My number's close to 62. Alcaraz, actually the real fun one, I got a bunch of Alcaraz will play, which I'm excited about. That was in like the 40s at one point after he pulled out of Cincinnati. I think that dipped down into the 40s. I got filled a bunch of Alcaraz will play. So
just will he not play? Oh, he's playing.
Will he show up? Yeah, basically. Yeah. Is he playing. Showing up? Yeah.
That video,
did you see his kit?
That video J-Rod sent us. He's playing.
Yeah. Did you see his kit?
No. Good.
He's got like a New York Knicks kit.
Oh, smart.
It's like the sleeve. It's like the sleeveless. How he likes the sleeveless tops. It's full on New York Knicks inspired.
Last thing on tennis, because we'll get to football after the break. Ladies, say it with me, Drew. Who's your girl?
Iga's live. She's live. Is that what you were hoping for? No, the real quick on the women's, is this awesome that we have gone through the cycle, and it feels like there's like because Andreeva won the French and Noskova won the Wimbledon, there's like a lot of mission has not been accomplished. We have not gotten the what we wanted out of this season from Iga, from Sabalenka, for Goff, Osaka, Pagula, like a bunch of really, really good women who I think are coming into this tournament with like a prerogative, and that's going to make it fun.
Can't wait. Drew, Zach, and I will do the U.S. Open pod coming up. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro. Joe Sheehan, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Joe, I know how much you love me reading tweets before your segments.
Come on, man. Yeah. We're not going to keep doing that.
No, that's the last one. I promise. That's the last one. Okay, you have bets today. Let's start with the Rockies and the Dodgers.
Yeah, this is mostly just a fade of the Dodgers. I know they put up an 11 spot last night against Sugano, who I understand was the most profitable pitcher to bet on leading into yesterday, if I heard that correctly
yesterday.
But, you know, this is a team that's really struggled at the plate of late in the second half, really. The age of their team, there was some great analysis about by Eno Saris of The Athletic and Chad Moriyama over at Dodgers Digest talking about how they're seeing a lot more fastballs. I've done some work in the past looking at how older players are being pushed out of the league by fastball pitchers. So the Dodgers have struggled because of that. Tonight they throw Eric Lauer, a left-handed contact pitcher in Coors Field. This is one of those things where I don't know if the Rockies are going to win. I do think they have a better chance than the one plus 173 reflects. So give me the Rockies at the big number.
Tomoyuki Sugano, if you had bet him blindly in his 22 starts this year for the Colorado Rockies, you would be up, according to covers.com, over 13 units. So I don't know if there's anything to that. They just happen to win as dogs in most of those. So there you go. Not
pretty. I'm remembering our buddy Dave Sharapan with the CLV can.
Yes, the Dave Sharapin.
The track record can. Yeah. So Dave Sharapin. It doesn't really matter if you don't win that night.
May he rest in peace. And believe me, I have a whole lot of tennis ones that go in his CLV trash can. That's right. Here's a game that you're not required to watch. The Athletics at the Royals, but you do have a bet on it.
This is just straight fading the A's. They started the year 38-38. They're 11-38 since then. They're throwing Jack Perkins tonight, who's just, I mean, they're just trying to get through the season at this point. They've lost almost all of their good players. Tyler Soderstrom now on the IL. We'll see how long he's out. Shane Langeliers previously, Brent Rooker previously, Nick Kurtz. We'll see if he even comes back this year. You've got a team that's basically got two even average hitters in the lineup. So I gave out them to have the worst record in the league earlier this year on the show, and I think they're heading towards that now. They're just one of really the worst team in baseball right now. So this is just a straight fade of them. The Royals, it'll be a mishmash for them tonight. They're trying to work Daniel Lynch back into the rotation. They might use an opener for him. They might start him, but I don't really think it matters. The A's are so bad right now that only having to bet, you know, was it 138? I got them at earlier. It looks like it's up to 155 now on your screen. Even that against this A's team is good value.
Yeah, and let me just say this, because the A's, as we talked about earlier, the worst money line team in all of baseball. Again, if you went through the bizarro exercise of betting them every game this season, which, by the way, if you're doing that, something's terribly wrong with you. But they're actually worse at home, right? They're like, you'd be down 22 units on them at home only, he says. Oh, no, so 22 units overall, 19 of which at home, pardon me. 19 of the 22 are at home, actually, but here they are on the road against Kansas City. Before we move on to your other place, just for the Las Vegas folks who are listening, who are anxiously awaiting the Athletics arrival. Is there a franchise, you would know this, you're the person to ask on this, is there a franchise strategy that they just couldn't, I mean, for lack of a better term, they couldn't really care less what they do in Sacramento, and they're just sort of plant, the timing is to have it coalesce before they come to Vegas? In other words, maybe they'll start being more serious about player acquisition right before they come here, or am I just saying something hopeful?
Well, it was interesting because going into Sacramento last year, they signed Luis Severino, bumped up the payroll a little bit. They went out and, you know, signed Rooker to the extension. They signed Soderstrom to the extension, Jack Wilson. They were making commitments to that team, not just for Sacramento, but also with an eye towards, hey, this is going to be our core that we're going to have together for 3 or 4 years when we arrive in Vegas in 2028. So they have put that into play, but they've had such a hard time developing pitching and getting pitching. And now it's going to be very hard to get any pitchers to sign there. It's such a hard park to play in. I don't think the Las Vegas ballpark on the Strip is going to play as crazy as the one in Summerlin, Henderson. You know, they played that insane week of baseball games earlier this year. But it's going to be a hitter's park, and they might run into problems acquiring pitching. So they're going to have to develop it. Gage Jump has come up this year. You know, Jamie Arnold was their last year's first round pick. You know, he hasn't had that great a year, but you're looking to bring him up by 28. I do think they're targeting that. And the long-term question is, are they going to be able to sign players who are going to want to come and play with this team?
Yeah. Should be fun, man. Can't wait. Braves at Twins at Target Field. Speaking of a team that can't quite get it together, Twins still on the outside looking in the AL playoff picture, but they still have designs on the postseason. They can still get there again as the scrum that is the American League. They are plus 115 home dogs today against the Atlanta Braves, still looking good in the NL East.
Gil, let's be clear about this. I've called up 15 of my friends. We're trying to get into the AL wildcard race. I mean, I can probably, I'm like Monty Brewster. I can give you three good innings against anybody. And that's pretty much, you know, my contribution. So, you know, tonight I've given you a couple of fades today. I really like the Braves tonight for them. Tyler Mahle, since coming over from the Giants, two starts, been very effective. And it's come with a pitch mix. You know, sometimes you'll see this at the trade deadline. A guy will go to a new team. His new pitching coach, his new pitching staff will say, hey, why don't you do this? He's ditched his cutter in favor of a splitter. Just a dramatic change in his usage pattern with those two pitches, and he's been very effective over the two games. I'm going to say that that's real, and he's going to be able to outpitch Debbie Matthews tonight in Minnesota.
Okay. And then the Yankees. The Yankees is seemingly always, Joe, someone's always on the way to coming back and being back in uniform. Aaron Judge being the biggest of those. When is Aaron Judge coming back? Is it beginning of September? Is it mid-September? When is Aaron Judge going to be back in the pinstripes? Well, Carlos Rodon is the latest of the big names here. He is on the hill at Orioles Park at Camden Yards. Yankees are a slight road favorite. How are we playing this?
This is the same bet I gave out yesterday on prop points, basically. I had Shane McClanahan under 4.5 strikeouts in his first start coming back from the IL. He didn't get out of the third inning. Tonight, Carlos Rodon under 4.5 strikeouts. It's the same idea. You know, he went 41 and 54 pitches in his two rehab starts. He has a higher strikeout rate than McClanahan, for sure. The Orioles, a high strikeout team. I just don't think he's going to be able to work deep enough into this game to get 5Ks. So give me Rodon under 4.5 strikeouts, and I believe it was plus money when I saw it on DraftKings this morning. So, again, Rodon's going to be fine. He replaces Max Fried, who you talk about Yankee injuries. Fried just went back on the IL with the bone bruise on the left arm. So the Yankees have enough pitching depth that it's not critical. So, yeah, I think the under on K's for Rodon tonight.
Yeah, Fried, by the way, for those who missed it, 15-day IL retroactive to the 14th of August with a left elbow bone bruise. As Yankee fans sarcastically say yesterday, oh, I'm sure it's nothing. Yankees are going to win the pennant, aren't they, Joe, when all is said and done? They're going to win it, aren't they?
Sorry, I can't hear you. You're breaking up. Yeah, I honestly, the AL, it's going to be a total scrum. You're going to have the top and the bottom playoff team separated by 15 games, and anything can happen.
It's going to be fun, man. That means people should be betting, you know, matchups in the World Series, exactas, because it's just you're going to get better numbers than most other years with all of this uncertainty in the American League. Joe, can't thank you enough. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
Joe Sheehan, everybody. Best in the business. JoeSheehan.com for his newsletter. Coming back with Jeff Parlay next. Ladies and gentlemen, we refer to him here on this show. Now that we have 10 producers, we are calling Danny Higgins officially now producer number 10. Danny is our first producer that is not actually on air with us of the 10 most of the time, though he has been in the past. But Danny is officially the 10th producer. We call this gentleman the Grover Cleveland of producers because he was producer 5 and producer 8. He now works here in Las Vegas in local radio. It's the great Jeff Parles, who we, of course, call Jeff Parlay. How you doing, Jeffrey?
I'm good. You know, the mention of Nick Bakay for a person of my age.
Yes.
Might know Nick Bakay best from the great Nickelodeon show Angry Beavers, Gil.
Really?
So that's a perfect blast from the past for me.
Wow. And I didn't even know that. Nick Bakay for sports bettors is most famous because well before ESPN would ever utter anything about betting, he used to do it was sort of a fictional segment about he and his wife betting Sunday football games. And everybody remembers Advantage Push in that Bakay voice that he would do. But it was done so cleverly. So we're looking forward to having Nick on that. By the way, the call letters of the local station here in Las Vegas that you work for?
So we just go by ESPN Las Vegas, okay. Gilly. That's the if you're looking for us on the internet, just put in ESPN Las Vegas. That's the best way to do it.
Okay. I was old school with call letters, but you're right. ESPN Las Vegas. We'll do the trick. All right. You have a bunch of pro football thoughts. You have a bunch of college football thoughts. Let's start with pro football since we're just talking about our futures draft. And let's begin. By the way, it's funny because you sent me bullet points and I read them all in your voice. The way that you wrote them, I was dying laughing. Beginning with the Baltimore Ravens, who, by the way, Danny Higgins, producer number 10, is a big fan of. He's not going to like what you have to say here.
So I'm not saying that the Ravens aren't going to win 13 games or they're not going to win the AFC North going away or anything along those lines. But haven't we learned our lesson over the years that the Ravens, for whatever reason, are overrated going into the year or get overrated vastly during the year? This year, you have a win total of 11.5. I mean, you look at that on your screen, they're almost $4 to make the playoffs. They're odds on to win a division, which, look, I think Cleveland obviously has the worst quarterback situation in the NFL. The Steelers don't have Mike Tomlin. So even though I think McCarthy might be a little bit better than Tomlin at this point, the zombie nature of Tomlin always going over 500 isn't there anymore. And the Bengals always, can Joe Burrow play a whole season? But I don't think, when you look at this, I don't think Baltimore should be the favorite to win the AFC because you have first-time coaching staff there now. Now, do I think Jesse Minter ends up being a good coach? Probably. But do we know that for a fact? No. Declan Doyle is younger than me. So I wonder if, again, I think he's, again, a guy that I think will be good down the line. I don't know if he'll be good right away as their OC. And then we get to Lamar. There's no arguing Lamar's talent, Gil. We've talked, even going back to when I was producing for you as number five, not number eight. I mean, my number five year was the year that Baltimore was the one seed and Jackson won his first MVP. Mm-hmm. We know how good Lamar is, but I don't think he's capable of playing 17 games. I don't even think he's capable of playing 14 games. So how can you have a team where the quarterback, as good as he is always going to miss about a month of the season as the team that is favored to win the AFC, a team with that high of a win total? Again, I don't know if I'm going to end up placing any bets, but 11.5 feels really, really high on Baltimore.
You know, I always add this to the Ravens because I'm listening to everything you said. So I, again, for those who listen to the show, know that my nephew, my little guy, Owen Wright, who is now with the Houston Texans, in training camp with the Houston Texans, but he was with the Baltimore Ravens. And he used to talk about how John Harbaugh used to make them do two-a-days at a rate that was way different from any other NFL team. And the reason he knew that is because when they would bring in players from other teams, they would often say to him, like, what the hell are we doing? Like, we're working way, this isn't training camp. And I always wondered from those stories, and I have no way of proving this, right? But I always wondered from those stories, I was like, did John Harbaugh work them too much early that by the time seasons wound down, they were just gassed as a football team? And now there's no John Harbaugh. So I wonder if that will change. Who knows? Just a thought on that. You, like many, are bullish on the Houston Texans, though.
This is more a fate of the rest of the division. Now, I need to see C.J. Stroud regain some sort of good form, right, Gil? Because if C.J. Stroud was even just okay in that game in Foxborough last year, we probably would have talked about a Seahawks-Texans Super Bowl, not a Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl a year ago. Stroud obviously has regressed since that amazing rookie year. I need him to get a little better to push them on that, like, plus 850 you see on your screen to win the AFC. But the rest of that division, look, Jacksonville, they had an amazing year last year, but they were in they had cap issues. So I don't think they've improved. I think they're a big-time regress. The Titans aren't ready yet. The Colts, I have no idea what to make of Indianapolis. Houston, I know what I'm getting out of that defense, even though I'm not a huge fan of the quarterback or the coach. I know that defense is going to be top five, at worst top seven. That should be more than enough to win this division comfortably. We're getting plus money still across the board on Houston. I'll take them to win the division at plus money. I think the best number out there is plus 115 for Houston to win the AFC South.
Anything with a plus price, you like it on Houston to win the AFC South. All right, let's go to the NFC. Oh, boy. Cowboys to win the NFC East and Cowboys to make the playoffs. You like both of those?
I am very scared at how much I like Dallas coming into this year, Gil. It's a very scary proposition because you're dealing with a head coach that I don't love, even though Shoddy was better than I thought he was going to be in year one. But here's my thought process with Dallas. Their offense, assuming everyone stays healthy, and really that's just Dak and Lamb and Pickens. And who knows, obviously, with the Pickens nonsense as well with his contract. But as long as those dudes stay healthy, I don't care what the running back situation is. Their offensive line should be good enough. They're going to be a team that is a prolific offense yet again. Just get me from being a bottom three defense to a bottom 13 defense, Gil. And then all of a sudden, we're looking at a team that's a double-digit win team, a team that, look, I don't love Philly going into this year. I have no idea what the Commanders are going to be this year at all. The Tunsil injury obviously scares me. But I think this is an offense that is going to be top five, a defense that will be good enough. Dallas wins 11 games. That should be enough to win the NFC East as well. I'm on the Cowboys to win the NFC East, make the playoffs, go over, which probably means they'll go 6-11 and Dak will get hurt.
Oh, God. If we were off air and you were doing that, I would have held my hands to my ears and be like, la, 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 la. Just got can't stand the Cowboys. Chiefs, you are not in any way worried. You're over 10.5 wins on the Chiefs. Schedule a lot to do with that, you say.
Yeah, this is probably the least favorite of the ones I gave you, Gil. But I just think that we talked about last year, oh, they're going to regress to the mean on the one score games, right? They did that last year, but they did that to the absolute extreme.
Yes, they did.
So here we go again. We're going to regress to the mean again on one score games. You flip a few of them. Mahomes is more healthy. The injury bug is a little better for Kansas City. Playing a third place schedule for the first time in the Mahomes era, period. I think they're going to win the division out west, and I do like them to win 11 games, 12 games. So we'll go over 10.5 on that win total.
Yeah, Chiefs 11-0 in one score games in 2024, 1-9 straight up last year. So you're right, to the extreme. Let's squeeze in one more. Packers under 9.5 wins.
This is just that this division is awesome. It's the best one in football. And someone's got to have a down year. And it's either going to be Green Bay or Chicago. But I like Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams more than I like Jordan Love and LaFleur. So that's why I went with Green Bay under 9.5. I think the Lions, even with their secondary issues, are going to be much better than they were a year ago. And Minnesota's a huge wild card. Green Bay under 9.5.
Yeah, Packers have been to the playoffs 3 straight seasons. But guess what? If we were back in the old format where 7 teams didn't make it, guess how many times the Packers would have been in the playoffs the last 3 years? 0. Been a 7 seed all 3 of those years. More NFL, and we'll get to college football next with Jeff Parles. It's a numbers game right here at VC. Coming back. Jeff Parlay is, in fact, a guest, kind enough to the guest for the moment, kind enough to join us for a second segment. You may know him as Jeff Parles. Hard for me to get Parles out, right? Jeff Parlay. As your late grandfather greeted me with, "Hello, Gil, Stephen Parlay," and I had so much shame.
Great moment. But
the shame that came over me in that moment. Okay, let's get, because we have a bunch more to get to, so let's get to them. Continuing with your NFL thoughts, let us continue with, like, we left off with the Packers. Ooh, this is an interesting one. Niners under 10.5 wins. All comes down to the injuries, doesn't it?
That is why I did it. Now, you'll see on your screen in a second that 9.5 is a number that is out there a lot. I would not bet the 9.5. Make sure you go find a 10.5. And Circa's got one. Obviously, they have it up and down. And there was a, I forget which other book. I think it was Caesar's. At 10.5 minus 140, which I don't love the juice, but maybe worth it to even lay that. Just because, look, San Francisco, I don't want to get into the substation nonsense, but they always seem to have injuries. Ricky Pearsall's not going to play at all this year. I thought he was going to have a big second year in the league. You're playing in a really difficult division with arguably the 2 best teams in the NFL ahead of you in the Rams and the Seahawks. It's just really hard to go over 10.5 in that scenario, in that division. So I'll go under 10.5. Make sure you find the 10.5. because it wouldn't shock me if they go 10-7.
Yeah, I'm super bullish on the Niners this year, but I have to concede every injury that comes down the pipeline, I just start shaking my head. I'm like, here we go again. All right, last two NFL, they're both New York teams, and you both don't like either of them. Under on the season win totals for both the Jets, your Jets, by the way, and the Giants.
So this is a complete fade of the Jets' schedule and the coaching staff still being the worst in the NFL. Aaron Glenn was the most obvious one-and-done candidate I can ever remember. They keep him around because he was a former Jet, and we're going to change the culture and all that. And honestly, Muji, the GM, likes him. And I actually think Muji's built a pretty good offense, all things considered. They have a really good offensive line. I love that they brought Breece Hall back. I like their draft, even though Sadiq probably is going to miss some time. Geno is a total wild card at this point. But I still have big questions about that defense. They have a brutal schedule. Even with the last place schedule, it crossed with the AFC West and the NFC North, the Jets do. So really, really difficult schedule. I'll go under 5.5. And then the Giants, are we sure John Harbaugh is still a good head coach, Kelly? That's my big question here. And that kind of puts a bow on everything we started with, too. Like, are we sure that he is still a high-end coach? I'm not so sure about that. Jackson Dart can't even play a quarter in the preseason without going in the blue tent. And look, I have, that's another team I have questions about their defense. Playing in a division where, look, I have questions about Washington, but I think if Daniels can stay healthy, that offense will be good. You already heard my thoughts about the Dallas offense. And who knows with the Eagle offense, even though they can't be much worse than they were a year ago. I just don't like the Giants like a lot of people do. It's hard for me to see them going 8-9, 9-8. I like them under 2. I like the Jet under more than I like the Giant under, even though it's the smaller number, just because that Jet schedule is brutal and AG is so bad.
Are you excited by the fact this morning that Ian Rapoport has reported that the Giants have just signed Najee Harris to a 1-year deal? Does that move the needle for you at all? Yeah, me neither. No. Yeah.
I didn't realize he wasn't on the team, honestly. So, no, it doesn't.
All right, college football. Let's do this in reverse order. Let's do the non-betting thoughts first, because I want to get this, the macro at the top, out of the way here. Texas, Miami,
yeah.
Oregon. You feel one of those teams is undervalued and the other two you're not buying into. Which is which?
So, Oregon's the overrated one. I don't understand how, and again, the AP poll's meaningless. But could they go 11-1 or 10-2 in the regular season? Sure. Would I ever want to bet them at that plus 750 to win the national championship? No way, Gilly.
Yeah.
No way. I have no faith in Dan Lanning in these huge games. And I also am not convinced Dante Moore is as good as people think he is. Now, Oregon is going to beat up on the weaker teams they play in the Big Ten. They do have to play Ohio State again this year. So that will obviously be a big game. Buckeyes are going to be awesome, but they might have an extra loss than they probably should just because of the nature of their schedule. Also, that game in LA against USC will be tricky for Oregon. It wouldn't shock me if the Ducks go 10-2, 9-3. But they're the ones that are ranked high that I don't really love. The Texas Longhorns have the most talented team in the country, Gil. They have the most talented team in the country in my book. If you're paying attention by the end of the year last year, Arch Manning was the second best quarterback in college football. The only guy who was better was Fernando. That was it. And Arch was awesome after that loss to Florida.
Down the stretch.
So yeah. Texas, unbelievably talented, but their schedule is brutal. And this is the case with everybody in the SEC. Their schedule is just so hard with the extra conference game. Texas could still make the playoff. They could still win the national championship. But their schedule is brutal with that Ohio State game mixed in week two, which then I guess by default leaves Miami, right? Mm-hmm. The Canes are awesome. The Canes are awesome. I still have my questions about Crystal Ball, but the man almost did win the national championship last year. He's almost knocked off the voodoo of the idiocy that ends up happening in his games. They have an unbelievable quarterback, running back, wide receiver punch with Mensah, Fletcher, and Tony. I would say it's the best in the country, actually, even though I think Texas is more talented on defense. Miami's defense is unbelievably talented. The Canes at 10-1, I think, is a good bet because I expect them to go at worst 11-1. If they lose a road game in Notre Dame, fine. They're going to be in the playoff. They're probably going to have a bye. I think Miami's your best bet on the board right now at 10-1 to win it all.
10-1 to win it all. And every time you bring up, you know, every time anyone brings up the whole SEC thing, with the extra conference game, I always say, I go, that's the key. That's the biggest thing of this whole season with the extra conference game, because the committee is going to have so many decisions to make. How are they going to value that with 9-3, let's see, SEC teams when all is said and done? All right, real quick, give me 20 seconds on these final three bets here. Yep. 20 seconds on each. SMU to make the college football playoff plus 430.
Yeah, this is a schedule bet on SMU. If they beat Florida State week one, who's a total wild card, the rest of that schedule, the only game I really see them losing is the game at Notre Dame. There's another coin flip against Louisville. I think they win that, but I think that's a good bet on an 11-1 SMU making the college football playoff, Gil.
All right, this is Jeff pandering to the Las Vegas audience. UNLV to win the Mountain West.
Yeah, UNLV could have a struggle in non-con, but if they win week one at Hawaii, I think they get North Dakota State at home. New Mexico's quarterback is injured right now, and we don't know his health for the season. Rebels, even though they're the favorite on that board, I think they're the best team. I think they win the Mountain West, not a Boise's not in the conference
anymore. All right, and then traditional ACC power, Cal, over 6.5 wins, yes?
This is a complete bet on them winning week one against UCLA. Yeah. If they win that game, I think they're winning 8 or 9 games. If they lose that game, I'm in big, big trouble, Gil.
Jeff, awesome having you on the show. I was going to say seeing you, but I see you all the time. But awesome having you on the show. Listeners love you. Thank you so much for spending the time. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Gilly.
Jeff Parles, everybody. Here in Las Vegas, you can hear him on ESPN Radio locally. Jeff Parles on Twitter. We call him Parlay, but it's Parles.